Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro of the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Something spooky.
Some monster was standing there. It reminded me of Bigfoot.
In walked tall, gray alien.
One of the teenage boys started to exhibit signs of textbook demonic possession.
I'm Derek Hayes, host of Monsters Among Us podcast.
This pure all-white entity staring straight at me. Where there should have been eye sockets, there weren't.
Monsters Among Us is an anthology of real paranormal stories told by real witnesses.
I never really believed in this Loch Ness Monster nonsense, but something very snake-like lifted its head out of the water.
A giant black triangle. It was so big that it blotted out the stars.
And I saw what looked like a huge monster. I could see the outline of hair.
New episodes of Monsters Among Us drop every Thursday. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Somehow I had lost 8 whole hours.
On this edition of Into the Fray, I welcome Leo back on with me. He was my guest for episodes 213 and the recent 379, titled High Strange Ojai, Part 1 and 2. So we are back for Part 3, as we still have plenty to cover. Leo, welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. Thank you, Shane.
I wanted to open with this because I think that people could probably get away with not listening to 213, but I would hazard to say they, considering the kinds of things that we're covering, because it's attached to you and family members, don't you think it's probably a good idea if they listen to 379 before they listen to this one?
Yeah, sure.
That was just maybe a suggestion of mine, but hey. If people want to hop in here and then go backwards, totally fine too. I know people listen to the show that way as well. So, okay, well, the very next thing on this list here that we were going to possibly start with was you titled it the Arizona Shadow Man Cowboy.
Yeah, during when I was in the military, my wife and I would drive back and forth from Georgia to California quite a bit because we couldn't really afford plane tickets. Military doesn't pay a lot. We ended up staying at a hotel. It wasn't even like a big named city in Arizona. It was just, we were close to New Mexico and it was starting to get, it was a little past dinner time and we were like, okay, we need to stop. We ended up staying at this little tiny motel and it just felt really weird. You know, we went to go eat across the street and then walked back to the little motel. And that night I really wasn't sleeping good. And I kept hearing something towards the bathroom. There's like this little closet thing and it was very dark and there's no lights out there really. I kept seeing this shadow walk across. And it wasn't like a hat man shadow, but it just, to me, looked like a cowboy. I don't know how else to explain it. And they would kind of like just pace around near the bathroom. It was like difficult for me to get back to sleep. And at one point, like, I didn't feel like it was anything bad or malevolent or anything. It was just, to me, was like, it was just there. And I just got to the point where I was so tired that I just turned around and went to sleep, which is, I know everybody like, oh, I saw the shadow man. And I just turned around and went to sleep. And yeah, I don't know. I wasn't scared of it. It startled me at first, and I kept seeing it. I kept hearing it pace around. So that was pretty much that on as far as that shadow man experience. I've had several shadow person experiences growing up, like seeing him in my house growing up and seeing him at the current place that I'm at and the place I was at before. Like here, really nothing, maybe once or twice something. Growing up, I had seen the one with like the sharp fingers and the Hat Man and everything else. And I hadn't really heard stories of the Hat Man or the Shadow Man or whatever. Yeah, that's pretty much what that bullet point's about.
Leo, if your wife had been awake or if you had woken her up, do you think she would have been able to see him or it, whatever it was?
I think so. I never really bothered her with stuff like that because, I don't know, it's like it's just stuff I've always kind of dealt with and seen. And, you know, at the time I talked to her a little bit about it and I don't think she was very receptive to it. And as of late, she's very much receptive to a lot of that stuff. I don't think she believed in a lot of the stuff. Like she'd go, okay, well, I don't see that kind of stuff. But now, you know, especially since my parents have passed, just some of the things that have gone on, my parents' place before they moved out to move to a new place, you know, she had kind of experienced a couple things that she believed were probably paranormal or whatever, but and doesn't discount it, you know, and she's kind of interested in going on a ghost hunt or at least a historical type tour the next time I do Ventura Theater or something.
Now, how do you feel about that? Since, I mean, you have essentially a lifetime of paranormal happenings and your things are very drawn to you. How do you feel? Would you go on the ghost hunt with her or the tour that is supposed to be this haunted thing and she wants to experience something? I mean, you've experienced a whole lot. Would you want to be part of that? Or are you kind of yeah, that's your own thing. Okay.
Yeah, because we did a ghost tour. I'm trying to think when we went to San Diego. Or no, that was in, I did that one with my son. We had done a ghost tour when we had gone to San Francisco one time. And, you know, it's more of a, like a historical type tour of like the Victorian part of San Francisco. And it was interesting. You know, there was nothing going on that happened while we were on that. As far as like locally, though, we have the Majestic Ventura Theater out here in Ventura, California. It's extremely haunted. And she's kind of interested to go to that because my son's done some investigations with one of the guys who runs it. It's a theater that's been there since like the 20s. The architecture is pretty amazing. I've always experienced stuff when I went there, like as a concert goer or whatever. And I always just thought it was me. And some of the stories that I had from there, you know, my brother who worked at Ventura Theater as security later, as I got older, he was telling me a bunch of stories. Pretty much everybody that works there has stories about stuff. And they kind of corroborate with the things that I've seen. My son's kind of, with his filming and everything else, has gotten to be good friends with one of the local person here who has an investigation team. And he actually kind of manages Ventura Theater. And they, like last year, they did a paracon and this year they're doing one. But like some of the things that have happened to me, I remember going to concerts and like thinking, why is there like somebody up there? If you look at the ceiling, I would see somebody's hand sticking down from a hole in the ceiling. You know, I was like, well, why is somebody like working up there during a concert? And that's just super weird. It turns out somebody had fallen and died from there. Also, like one of the times my bands was playing there and it's just, you get up on the stairwell to go up into the green rooms, and there gets to be a point where, like, you feel nauseous, I guess. Like, I had felt that feeling before at the Winchester Mystery House, like going up a certain part of the stairs. Things just seem, I don't know how to explain it, not nauseous, but dizzy and like a seasickness for a couple of seconds. And like things aren't right. You know, you feel that and you can hear noises and stuff at Ventura Theater when, you know, obviously when there's not a concert going on. But I had gone on an investigation once with my son. He got me to go in, and it's been closed, you know, to the public for investigations, except for the Paracon that they had and the one that's coming up. We were doing an investigation upstairs. Like, I kept feeling somebody and hearing somebody next to me. And I looked over my shoulder to my left, and by one of the doors, I saw somebody moving. And it was a shadow figure, but I was just talking to the person. And they were kind of responding, but I don't know what they were saying. They had gotten some of that footage on a FLIR when I was talking. There was a figure behind me that showed up on the FLIR. Also, like, going out onto the balcony area, just standing out there by myself. It's pretty dead quiet. You can hear people shuffling, or you can hear knocks. You walk in one moment, and the chairs, it was a theater, and so upstairs still has the theater seating. The chair seat would be folded down. Well, they're spring-loaded. You know, some of the springs don't work very well, so you put it down and it stays down. And then you lift it and it comes up, and others, you know, you push the seat down like at a theater. And as soon as you get up, it springs back up. And there were quite a few of them that would just like be down, and then you'd go back in there and they'd all be up. But yeah, that place is crazy. It's just got a history. It was pretty much built by the mob during Prohibition. In the women's bathroom, there's like a safe tucked away between the two entrances, the entrance and exit to the woman's bathroom. It was an office at one point. There's like a kill floor up near the green rooms near the stage. There's been a lot of confirmed deaths and a lot of unconfirmed deaths. It was a brothel, a gambling hall, an actual music venue, and like a stage for plays. All through downtown Ventura, there's underground tunnels. There's still an existing tunnel from that building to a little dive bar across the street. And most of the tunnels are covered. And I have a friend that's a contractor, and he does work downtown Ventura. And there's tunnels between downtown for most of the buildings. But anyways, like, so people would go into one of these buildings, they'd go through the tunnels, go to the speakeasy or to the brothel, take care of business, and then they'd leave like the bar or their business office. They were at their business office all day instead of down at the brothel. And so there's a lot of hidden rooms inside Ventura Theater. Like, you walk into one area and it's like one side of the building, it's the same thing. But if you look really closely, you'll see that one wall extends out quite a few feet more than the other wall. There's like hidden rooms and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, one of the times my son was investigating, they just caught a lot of stuff on film. And it's beautiful architecture and it's got a lot of history. And most people don't even know the amount of history that the place has. And I've like gone to see concerts there, and I've sat up in the theater balcony area. And I've also, you know, gone to see movies there when I was a kid, when it was actually a movie theater for a while. And, you know, I've had pushing on my back while I'm sitting down, and it's a metal backed chair with cushion, but, you know, you feel somebody poking into your back or pushing into your back. I mean, I even had that happen a couple of years ago when I went to see a concert. I ended up going up to sit because it was kind of a post-surgery thing and I didn't want to stand out on the floor, but it's a pretty haunted place.
Now the kill room, what does that look like? How big is that? That's stuck out to me.
Well, they call it the kill room because if you go up into the green room areas, there's a couple rooms where they keep equipment and stuff and extra cables and things. And there's a room that's got an area that has like a thing, kind of like a hook that hangs really high. And there's a trap door that drops down to like one of the lower floors.
Oh, wow.
Like not near the stage floor, but beyond that. That kind of leads to one of the tunnels. So when psychics have been through there, they're like, oh, well, this is, you know, an area where they used to torture people or kill people. And, you know, there's a lot of stories of deaths that have happened there, or like unwanted pregnancies from the brothel workers. And yeah, it's a lot of, there's actual confirmed deaths of stuff that happened. Like when my mom was in high school in the 50s, you know, there was a school that it wasn't like hers because she was in another town, but there was a school that had a prom there. A girl had fallen to her death from above the stage because, you know, they have the catwalks and stuff. And so those are like actual confirms. There's a lot of confirmed deaths in the area or in the building. And there's a lot of non-confirms because it was run by the mob, because Ventura at one point during Prohibition had one of the longest piers in the state of California. So all these agents were always concerned with, you know, the big ports where people were coming in. But if you could get to Ventura Pier, you'd only have to go a block or two with your load and hit one of the tunnels or hide your stash in a building and then move it from place to place. And, you know, when the mob had control of everything, they would actually just disperse stuff through tunnels. And there's like so many rooms in there they don't even know about. Like a lot of the people, the owners in the past, and even one of the present owners doesn't want to do any digging around. But it's crazy. Like there's some areas that there's stuff in there. If you look into some of the pits and stuff, there's stuff in there that's been in there since the 20s and 30s. And it's like, I'd love to go digging through there to see what's in there, but they don't know how big that room is or whatever, because they're trying to like preserve it. Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'll bet there are some bones or other things buried there.
who knows? But like, yeah, there's like an area off the side of the balcony, and it's a actual hallway that goes down to the lower businesses and floors that align the building or that are within the building. And there's like a hole in the wall that they had done for some construction stuff. And you look through this hole in the wall, and there's another wall behind it, but like there shouldn't be anything behind that wall. It should just be the wall that's a couple feet away. And if you look down with a flashlight, it just keeps going, you know, but they don't know really what's down there.
Wow. What a cool building. I didn't know about underground tunnels in Ventura, California. That's really cool.
A lot of people don't. Wow. But yeah, it's like they're going to have a Paracon coming up again. And they're giving tours and ghost tours and other stuff. Like this is kind of the first time they're really opening up. I think a lot of people don't know the history, and it's right there. I mean, Ventura is full of a lot of haunts. A lot of the buildings are pretty crazy as far as haunted buildings. The city hall downtown, the original city hall was built as a courthouse, city hall, everything else. Well, not the original one, but the one that was built in the 20s, it was all the marbles, reclaimed marble from Venice in Italy, because, you know, they're always moving stuff around because the sea level raises up and everything else. And why get marble when you can get it for cheap when they're tearing something down? So you have all this ancient marble that I'm sure soaks up energy, and it's brought over here. The building is made with reclaimed marble from Venice and other places. Like granite and marble, real beautiful building. But man, that place is haunted, crazy haunted. I've been in there quite a few times and gone on a ghost tour and like seen stuff upstairs in the old jail area. And caught, you know, they could be dust or orbs. You know, I'm kind of iffy on the orb thing, but they're, you know, I've seen shadows up there too when I was taking the photos of the up inside the old jail area. And that was a jail probably till, I don't know, probably the 80s when they built the new Justice Center in Ventura. And then that was also the county building at one point before the county moved out. Yeah, it's just, they've had some big, huge cases that have gone through there, and there's been ghost sightings all through the building. Yeah, it's another beautiful building with a lot of history. But like, even the guy that wrote all the Perry Mason books back in the day for the TV series that came out a long time ago, the black and white one. And, you know, they redid those in the 80s again. But that guy, he was a lawyer at that building. A lot of those cases were based off of cases that came across his desk or that he had dealt with or heard about. So he would incorporate them into the Perry Mason books. The building that he was had his law office, which is a couple blocks away from there, that's kind of a haunted building too. So there's a lot that goes on in the city, and a lot of people don't realize it. But it's like you can pick up on, I pick up on things when I'm walking around this place. It's pretty neat.
You should probably like team up with, if they have a ghost tour down there, you should team up with them and then start just adding buildings on. You're like, hey, I can go into this building and tell you like what's going on. I'm pretty sensitive to this stuff, so you can add buildings onto your ghost tour.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of the guys that run ghost tour things, it's they only do it like around, usually around Halloween, and it's like there's two people that usually do it, and they're kind of, it's their thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's weird like how people within the different communities don't communicate, or like, this is what I've heard and this is what's canon and this is what it's like. Why doesn't everybody just get together and collaborate with stuff? And I mean, you know, it's the same with the cryptid people and the ghost people
and UFOs. It's like, yep.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, nope, I don't believe that. Or, well, no, that a UFO
or this is my information or my, yeah, right. Yeah, it's mine.
Yeah. And it's like, why doesn't everybody share information? But it's like, oh no, that person was wrong. It's like, well, you know, maybe they were, maybe they weren't. Maybe they got part of the story and you have the other part. Like even downtown, we had a cemetery that all the founders were in during the late 60s. The city decided we're going to make it into a park because the mission downtown owned it, and they had the Catholic part of the cemetery. They owned all the property that the cemetery was on. They had different areas. You know, it was a pretty segregated little cemetery. It was like, okay, the Catholics are here, the Protestants are here, the this are here, the Chinese part of the cemetery is here, the Mexicans can be over here. It was like very segregated, and also segregated within religion and segregated within race. And so it's like, well, you take this part of the, you know, these are your parts of the cemetery, and this part of the cemetery was really well taken care of, and this part was kind of run down. And the city was like, well, nobody's really taking care of anything. And they annexed it to put buildings up and to build a little school next door and to do a road. And they never removed all the bodies. They said they did. And they said they contacted everybody, mm-hmm. but it was a really old cemetery, and it's called Cemetery Park in Ventura. There's actually a couple documentaries out on it, one that was recently done, but it's like there's tons of bodies that are still there. It was a kind of a little scandal that this city swept under the rug that they didn't move everybody. They were finding headstones in the canyons in the area, dumped in the ocean. They said they contacted everybody, but they didn't contact everybody, and they made everybody pay to move to the newer cemetery in Ventura.
Oh,
and
geez.
There's tons of bodies that are still there. And they've done like on one of the documentaries, they like bring in the ground radar, and yeah, there's still a ton of stuff, still a ton of bodies and things. And that's they just awful. Like, there's a parking lot, and it's a dog park and a park. Oh. And it's like, it's a parking really lot? Sad. Yeah, they built a apartment on one part of it, school on another part of it, a parking lot on another part, and then the rest of it's a park. And most people don't even know that it was actually a cemetery. That's why it's called Cemetery Park. A couple of years ago, the vets did put up a memorial there. But yeah, it was just sort of like, there's a lot of people buried there. And a lot of the people that were buried there were like founders of the city at the time. And most of the Chumash that were here, they're under buildings too. Because like when the mission was just taking everybody and putting them to work, they have part of their buildings are over the top of, you know, the mass graves that they had they didn't give the Chumash any special burials or anything.
And those are mass graves.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them were. You know, they would just put them all in the same spot. I mean, not just, hey, we're going to mass, you know, everybody, they would just like kind of put them together. It wasn't like it was, yeah, I mean, the same thing, you know, kind of goes for, you know, further up the coast at a lot of the missions in La Parisima and other places like that. It's like a lot of the missions are like that. And it's pretty crazy. Like, people don't realize all the stuff that went on. You know, and that's like my ancestry is like, you know, part of that is being mission people Chumash on my mom's side. And so, and there's not a lot of records of the people. Like, there's only a couple of missions that really have records. And that was like pretty much like Santa Barbara mission. And that's why there's the Band of Chumash up in the San Ynez area. And they all have records, but most people don't, because they had the Presidio in Santa Barbara. So they had the soldiers, but all these missions had, you know, they had cattle, they had ranching things going on with the locals, indigenous peoples working for them or kind of slaved for them, because they had oil and food and supplies. There were pirates that would go up and down the coast, or people would come and plunder the different missions. You know, when there were revolts from the local indigenous, they would try to burn down the mission. So records get lost. So like, I was even trying to get like records from where my grandmother's family's at, and that's like San Fernando mission area, and they don't have any records. I call about the Tangra Gabrielinos, and they're like, no, there's no records. You know, we have stories. So if you say you remember, you can join for, you know, we have a newsletter. But it's like, I'm not looking for, like, I wasn't looking for, hey, give me some cash. It's just like, I want to know more history. But there's really no history, because, again, like I had said, like earlier before, like my grandmother's mother, when she left the mission to marry my great-grandfather, she pretended that she was Mexican because she couldn't. You couldn't marry an indigenous person,
right?
And you couldn't marry out of race. So like, a lot of that's hush. And so my family didn't really know a lot about it. And my grandmother talked about it later in her life. You know, she was still very hush about it, because to her, it was like, oh, it's illegal. You know, well, like, what are they going to do, grandma? It's like 80 years later, 90 years later. What are they going to do? You know, it's not illegal now. I don't know. It's weird, because some of the older generation, it's like, oh, those were the rules. We got to stay with the rules. And we can't, you know, I was told never to talk about it. So, you know, it's kind of weird. Well, it's like we have this beautiful plant here all over California. It's the bougainvillea plant. It looks beautiful, but it sucks, like, if it's in your yard, because it grows a couple feet a month. It's got all these thorns and everything all over it. Well, the missions are covered in bougainvillea because they would plant it everywhere, because the indigenous people were barefoot, or they have these light sandals. Mm. So you put it all around the mission, and guess what? They can't escape.
Right.
I mean, they did the same thing in the Hawaiian Islands. You know, they have the razor grass. Well, that's not indigenous to Hawaii. The plantation owners put razor grass everywhere because the indigenous peoples there were barefoot primarily. So you'd try to take off in the plantations, and it was harder because you'd get sliced up from the razor grass.
You know, there's so many poor decisions that have been made in regards to humanity and just being a nice human to your fellow humans, even those that are past. And I just think some people deserve to be haunted, and not in a benign way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, they I don't know. To me, it's like a really interesting part of history that kind of gets covered up. I'm not trying to get like on a thing. It's just like, why, you know, maybe that's why this kind of stuff goes on, or some of the hauntings are there, because there's a lot of history that people don't know about. Some of the things make sense, you know, after you start connecting dots. And, well, you know, I'm not saying everybody was bad that was involved in that, but I wasn't there. I didn't experience it. But to me, some of the stuff seems pretty crazy.
Well, it'd be of interest to somehow talk to anybody in that apartment complex or that school, see if they ever experience anything, right?
Well, there are people that haven't stayed very long.
Oh, there you go.
And I have a friend who lives like not too far from there, but she's like, oh yeah, I don't know if I believe in that kind of stuff, but weird stuff happens here. So it's like, okay.
Right. I don't believe, but .. Yeah.
It was like my mom. I don't believe that we have a haunted house, but, well, yes, I hear the dishes moving around.
Right.
I hear the door slamming.
And nobody's home. Nothing's happened to me. It's okay.
You know, it's like, mom, what do you not, what, explain that to me. Well, I don't know what it is. I can't say that it's haunted. Then why do you keep calling the priest to come over and bless the house, you know?
Right. I mean, it's just a way to deal with it, I suppose, right? Because if you say it out loud, I might have a ghost. This may be a haunted home. Then you're really accepting it, and then you might have to kind of... I mean, she was dealing with it. I mean, she was bringing the priest over, as you say.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe just to voice it out loud is one step too far for some people.
Yeah.
I can understand that. Well, what do you want to cover next, Leo?
Well, I guess we just go down the list a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I've just had a lot of crazy stuff go on pretty much my whole life, I guess. It's weird because, like, there's so many one-offs that they don't really connect. And it's like, I always wonder, like, why are things always happening that it's me? But then I've had friends that have experienced stuff along with me, you know, or like my son experiences a lot of the same stuff as me. So it's not like, I'd always keep it quiet and never really talk about it, because I'd always think that maybe I shouldn't talk about it because everybody's going to think I'm crazy. But I've had friends that have called me and said, hey, come check out my house. You know, this is going, I'm like, I'm not a medium. I'm not a, but I sense things that have gone on sometimes. And I've seen little flickers of things that have happened, but I don't claim to be psychic. I just, maybe it's just something in my gut that I can say, this happened here, but I don't know that for a fact. And then sometimes I do some research and I find out some things had happened there, but
right. It
doesn't mean I'm psychic in any way. I don't know. Like I know my grandmother was, but my whole family on my dad's side has always had stuff. Like I didn't even realize, even my dad's dad did stuff like dowsing and stuff like that. He would do it more for like looking. He wasn't like a surveyor or anything, but like when he picked out property, he's like, I know there's water here because I was looking at the maps and it doesn't show water here, but there was an army base here in the 17, 1800s. And so I know there's water here because they had to give water to their horses. And so he looks at maps and goes, okay. And goes and douses and finds an area, and they call in the geologist, and he's like, yeah, I don't think you're going to find any water here. But yet he puts a well and there's water. Like his uncle used to do that for the railroads. Like they would dig tunnels through mountains in the Ohio and Pennsylvania area. He would do it with dowsing rods and some other stuff and some little bit of math. And it's like, okay, they meet in the middle as they're digging from either side. And this is going to be the path you want to go because you're going to hit ore over here. But maybe that's just part of geology and surveying. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why, you know, my grandfather chose the places that he chose because they always moved on my dad's side. You know, and it was weird. They always moved near military installations. And my dad always had, growing up along with his brothers and sisters, issues with possible UFOs or abduction type things. When they were in Ohio, they were near Wright-Patterson. When they were in Arizona, they were near some other military installation. They moved for a while and they lived in Colorado and they were right by another military installation. They had moved to here in Ventura County and they were near Point Magoo. When they lived in Wells, Nevada area, they were Hollick was an old military fort out there. It's not there anymore. I mean, I think there's remnants of the fort out there. And it's like in northwestern Nevada, kind of between Wells and Elko. And that's like where he dug for water, and because he had this idea that he bought land and was going to have pigs and cattle and stuff. And it never really panned out. But I mean, they had the well. And then the government took the well over because they weren't really living there, and other ranchers use it now. But and that was like near Hawlick or Wells, Nevada, between Wells and Elko. And there's nothing out there in northwestern Nevada. I mean, just pretty much desert. But it's like, why did they pick all the places they went? Like when they went out to Williamsburg, Virginia, they were right near the huge Navy base, you know? So I don't know if that has anything to do with, you know, the part of a psychic thing. They're like running from one thing to another, but yet they keep ending up near military installations. You know, I was even asking my uncle about that. I'm like, do you realize everywhere you guys moved to, you were near a military installation growing up? And he's like, I guess. I never really thought about it. I had had one experience like in downtown Ventura with dowsing rods. I had gone on a tour and we had done, we were at the courthouse and they were handing out, you know, different stuff for people to like, somebody got a, they handed somebody a little recorder. They handed somebody like another little, like a light type box, and they handed out dowsing rods and they're like, oh, who knows? I'm like, I don't know how to use this thing. You'd ask questions and the thing would cross and I wasn't moving the rods. So I believe in all that stuff, but I don't know how it all works. Some of the things I had also experienced growing up, when I was kind of being bothered by something that was following me, my brother was having the same problems where he was kind of getting attacked too. My friend who I'd always hung out with, he came to stay over one night at my parents' house. I had always seen different figures, different people in that house growing up. I stayed in my room and he stayed in like the family room area. He thought my grandmother for some reason had stayed over, but he's like, yeah, some, I was cold and I got up and I was going to go ask you for a blanket. This was one of those nights after we had been out way late. I mean, we were still in high school and get off of work. We'd go surfing. And then we'd like in the middle of the night, get off of work at 11, go surfing till like 1, go to Denny's till 2:33, and then go home. And then next day, get up and go to school and do whatever. And I don't even know how the hell we did that. You know, I couldn't do that nowadays.
That sounds like the life, though. That sounds amazing.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah. Hey, I made it to class this morning. But yeah, I could never do that now. And you could only do that a few days in a row. And then you have a couple days of rest. But it was one of those nights he crashed at my place and he's like, dude, I got up to get a blanket. And just as I was about to walk out into the kitchen area, your grandmother came and brought me a blanket. And I'm like, oh, dude, my grandma didn't stay here tonight. He's like, oh, this lady totally looked like your grandma. It wasn't my grandma. My grandma's not here. Because he's like, dude, I was expecting chorizo and everything for breakfast. I was so happy when I saw your grandma gave me the stuff. And I'm like, describe her. He's like, I'm pretty sure it was your grandma. And I'm like, no, my grandma didn't stay with us. I mean, things like that. Like, I had had other experiences with him before like that where we had, my parents had a video store for a while. I used to work there. My friend had come over one night and we were closing up and he had brought a Ouija board with him. And I was like, dude, I don't ever really want to play with that. Like, I think I got enough stuff going on. And he convinced me to like mess around with it. The thing with the little planchette was moving on its own and everything else. And he started asking a bunch of questions like, hey, who are you? This and that. And then like, at one point, like, I was like, I don't dig on this at all. That was like the one and only time I'd ever messed with the Ouija board. And like, it started giving weird answers. And the planchette was just kind of moving around a lot. I was like, dude, I'm like, quit messing around. He's like, I'm not messing around. And it was like moving faster and faster from one spot to another. And we couldn't even read what it was kind of saying. Then it pulled to one side, the planchette, and it stopped. All these videos on the shelf just sort of like flew off the shelf. It was the freakiest freaking thing ever. And I was like, I'm out. Let's go. We didn't clean up. We didn't anything. I locked up because I was supposed to be there the next day. We got to close this. Is there something? And he's like, I don't know. And we both kind of tripped out and just left. And that's like my only Ouija story. But like, I had other experiences with this guy too. But we used to like get off of work at 11:30 at night, worked at a local pizza place. There was this girl we'd drive out to, she lived the next town over. We just all, a couple of us would drive her out and drop her off. And and she lived in this place called Bardsdale, which is like an older community between Santa Paula, Fillmore, and that place was just creepy. The cemetery was really creepy. Like, we had gone there a few times and just to hang out and have a few beers, like dumb kids, and not, you know, no vandalization or anything, but just go hang out where nobody's going to see you. I always saw stuff that I hated, that freaking cemetery. I never wanted to go there. Like, I'd usually park there and everybody go in and hang out, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. Like, it scared the hell out of me. I would always see things moving around in that cemetery. And I'm not saying things are in cemeteries, so I go to cemeteries all the time, don't feel or see anything. But I just did not like that cemetery. We were hanging out one time, kind of walking in the orchards near that girl's house, and there was an old water pump house out on one of the roads. We were, you know, just kind of messing around, looking in the windows of this water pump house, like in the middle of the night, you know, like dumb kids, hoping the cops don't come by or anything. You could see things moving around within the water pump house. And in the daytime, we had gone by and they used it for store. Like, I guess the city used it for storage or whatever, the town. But there was like actual old, like school desks and stuff like that from who knows what era, probably before my mom's era of going to school. I mean, there was this weird stuff piled up in that old pump house that you could see in the daytime. But there always saw stuff moving around there. And then one night I dropped her off at home, and she's like, hey, come on in, come hang out for a bit. And I'm like, it's getting late. And she's like, yeah, she was telling me that she had a ghost that would come by all the time. And it was her friend. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? You know, because I didn't really talk about ghosts or anything to anybody. Back at that time, like, I wanted to hang out with this girl a lot when I was younger. Or not when I was younger, but during this time, I wasn't dating anybody. And so I was like, yeah, I'll hang out for a bit. And around probably like her mom was supposed to come home from work, and we were just hanging out talking, and heard somebody come up the steps of the front door. I'm like, huh, I thought your mom wasn't supposed to be home till some, you know, a certain time. And I was getting ready to leave, and she's like, that's not going to be my mom. I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, just watch. And you could hear the doorknob kind of move. It was locked. She locked it when we went in. And one of my other friends was there too. And the door opened and the door shut. And you could hear somebody walk up the stairs. And that's the first time I'd like really seen like something physical, but I didn't see what had caused this. I mean, I saw the door open. I heard the door jiggle. I heard something walk up the steps. And she's like, oh, that's so, like, she had a name for it. And I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, he protects me at night, so I'm not scared. My friend had kind of witnessed that too. And he's like, dude, that is the craziest thing ever. And she said that happens quite a bit. And then she stopped working with us, so I didn't really see her after that. And I mean, I'd seen her for like a month more at work until she went to go work somewhere else. But that was kind of a weird thing that had happened, it was pretty, to me, I always thought that was one of the coolest things. But like, I've seen people before, not there, but like when I've gone places, sometimes I've seen, the only way I can explain how I've seen people and that I've seen people, the most common way I've seen people that aren't there is if you ever are walking down the street and like you look into a window and you can see your reflection, and your reflection, it's there, but it's not like a mirror. Your reflection's there. It's just kind of grayed out, but you can see through it. That's what I've seen a lot of times. That's the only way I can explain it. Because if you're just walking down the street and you're looking in to look at something in a store, if you look, you see your reflection and you see all the colors. They're just not like if you're looking at a mirror, if that's how, I don't know how else to explain that. But I didn't see that when I was there that night. All I heard, I just heard, saw the door open shut and heard the footsteps go up.
Leo, there are three bullet points on this list that start with a word, either aliens or alien. Can we cover those? It starts with aliens after surgery.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, okay. I thought I had mentioned that before. But so when I had a surgery around 2014, 2013, and that surgery went pretty well. But like when I was coming up from the operating room, I saw a few figures around me, a couple tall figures, a couple short figures around me. And I thought it was like the doctors and everything, but there were no doctors or nurses in at that time that I had talked to. I would only see them kind of when I would shut my eyes. I would see the shadows of them through the light because it's pretty bright in hospitals. And when I'd open my eyes, they weren't there. But I could see the height and width, I guess, like people were there. And then that kind of stopped within a couple of days of me going home. About 6 months later, I had to go back in for surgery to redo something that didn't kind of go right, like kind of re-ruptured through a scar. That surgery was pretty bad because I was in a lot of pain. I had seen the same figures, like a really tall figure and like three or four other short figures. And at times, like sometimes two or three tall figures. And then smaller figures, and I could feel them messing around with like the incision site. This had happened even after I got home, because it was pretty much you go there and go in at 5 a.m. for the surgery, and by the afternoon you're going home. That had happened at my house several times, even at night. Like I could see them through my eyelids, and I'd open my eyes the first day after surgery, that first night after a surgery, like your body's trying to get rid of like all the toxins, all the everything within all the medication. So you're groggy, and I'd open my eyes and I would see figures, like a really tall figure and some smaller figures, and they looked alienish. They were always messing with my incision site, the site that had gone bad. I'd had two surgeries and they were both within the same area. The one side that was bad, they were always messing with it. And that just kept happening. And then as the days went on after the surgery, like got less and less, I was just sort of thinking, you know, well, maybe this is, it seems similar to, now I look back and think it's similar to like all the stories I had heard from my uncles and my dad. Other stories of people were like, okay, well, there's one big tall alien that kind of is in charge of like the smaller grays or whatever. And I don't know whether that's what that was, but it just seems like that's like a theme in a lot of alien type stories. But yeah, they were always messing with the one incision site. Like I could feel them messing with it. And it's a thing that I had a lot of scarring with and everything else. And, you know, and I hadn't mentioned before, but, you know, when I was on like the last time we had spoke, I talked about like there were slee stacks that used to come at night and take me places on these little adventures and things. And there was one that was in charge. He was a taller, I described them as slee stacks because that's the closest thing I could describe them as. And maybe that's just because whatever that was presenting itself to me because it was familiar to me. And there was one that was kind of in charge of the others that looked different and was taller, was more authoritarian, but not in a bad way. It was just sort of like it kind of ran the lessers, I guess. And I don't know if that's within the same theme. Is that the same thing or not? Yeah, things that have happened, I guess, within that. So the aliens after surgery, the aliens in the underground tunnel, like in the mountains last time too. And that was kind of the same thing. Like I had seen the figures. I had gone with my parents because I used to mountain bike a lot. And I took him to this area that I kept exploring and writing down these areas, but like I had never ridden into a mountain, but I have memories of riding my bike through the mountains all the time. And I mean, I used to mountain bike a lot all through the mountains, but I have memories of riding my mountain bike all through this mountain, like going into a cave in the mountain and continually go down a path. And as soon as I get into the mountain, like everything was red. When I had explained that story last time, it was like, I was there with my dad and he was sort of like, I was showing him this town or development that I had found and of like, you know, new houses that were being built. And I was realizing that everything in it was fake. It was a Potemkin village. It wasn't real. Everything was a show. Like I'd go to move the cabinet and it was cardboard. I'd go to move something else and it wasn't real. Like it was set up to look real. My dad's like, this isn't real and we need to get out of here. And these figures were all the way in a different housing tract that we could see them far off. And they kept getting closer and closer. And when we went to go out the front door, they were standing there. And it was the same thing. There was like one tall and a couple shorter guys. And then I woke up and that was the most real thing. You know, you have dreams. There's things that I don't know how to explain it, but it is the most real, most vibrant, it was reality to me. But the thing is, like, after talking, like, I had always wanted to tell my dad about this, and I'd wanted to tell him about it several times. Like, I'd remember it, and I'd go to tell him, and I couldn't remember any of the story. And then when I was able one time to kind of recount all that to my dad, as I was describing the colors and the vibrancy of what was around and describing everything around the housing tract, he could finish the sentences. Like, he knew what that was. Oh, this is what the ground was. Was the ground soft? What color were the rocks? What side of the trail was the mountain on? What color was the sky? All this crazy stuff. And my older brother was able to tell me the same thing. I hadn't mentioned to you, like, I had chronic, well, I mean, I wrote to you later, but I had chronic nosebleeds as a kid. Chronic. I had had my nose cauterized 3 or 4 times when I was a kid. And that was all around the same time that the Sleestaks were visiting me.
Mm.
And that's one of those crazy things where it's like, that's like a sign of alien abduction, isn't it? I mean, and I don't know if it is or not. And again, I'm not saying, I don't know. Hey, you know what? Every one of my conspiracy theories in the last 3 years has come true. So I'm waiting for Bigfoot and I'm waiting for the aliens.
Bring it on. Bring them both on. I'm so ready. Right. I'm so ready.
I totally believe in the Bigfoot. I just haven't seen him. I think I've heard him, but I haven't seen him, you know? And it's like, why not? To me, I can't be on the camp that I didn't believe. It was just like, some of the shows are so outlandish. And it was like, I wasn't into it because it made everybody look not, a lot of the shows out there make people look not educated and stuff. And mm-hmm. It's like, I know there's so many good investigators and smart things going out. And again, I'm sure a lot of those people don't talk with each other either, because it's only this and it's only that. And I wish everybody would get together under one big giant freak tent and hang out and share stuff so that we could all know what's really going on.
If those damn egos would stop getting in the way, we could maybe get something done around these parts, you know?
Yeah. So I mean, I had seen ships before, you know, because I think that's in some of the bullet points. Like when I was a real little kid, I was with my brother and my grandparents' neighbors, and they'd come over to our house. We were outside playing. And why we did this kind of crap, I don't know, but we were like jumping off the roof. If I jumped off the roof right now, oh my God, I would break a hip and a leg and everything else. But we jump off the roof. I don't know why the hell we would do that. But anyways, that was like one of the things we were doing to keep occupied, you know, hang out, ride our bikes around, and then jump off everybody's roof. We're in the middle of this, and my brother jumped off, and he looked up, and he's like, what the heck is that? And we had seen this craft that it looked like a big, giant, silvery cigar. And the only way I can describe it, and we all saw the same thing, is there was a Scooby-Doo episode, and there was like this alien, and there was an alien ship, and it was shaped like a cigar. And we could see, we all saw that same type of a UFO, what we believed to be a UFO. We saw that thing in the sky with the same kind of alien-y looking thing in it. And it was like, why would, there were six of us and we all saw the same thing. I mean, if I even talked to my brother today about it, he remembers the Scooby-Doo UFO. Is that something that just showed itself to us in a way we could relate to it? I don't know. Why would we all have the same memory of this thing that went on? Like, for years, I thought that was just my imagination or it must have been a dream. But my brother remembers it. So we were talking about it a while ago. A couple times a few years ago, I like to see, hang out outside and look at stars and things. And I was in scouts and everything as a kid. So I know what satellites look like going across the sky when there's no light pollution or anything. And I'd seen some stars that were moving around and they just, the way they jumped from place to place and the amount of time that they jumped from place to place and getting closer and further away. I even woke my son up because he was still living here at that time and, you know, kind of freaked my wife out because I got up and I was like, oh my God. And she's like, what? And I was like, told her and she wouldn't even go look at the window. She's like, you guys are high. And so I went and got my son and we were looking out the window and we saw lights moving around in the sky and it wasn't helicopters. I was in the military. I know what helicopters look like. And that wasn't it. You know, another time I had seen something similar. Well, my son had recently seen something like that too. He was working security and he used to work nights and he was out up towards the mountain going towards Ojai. And he was, you know, he had to guard this, an Edison area. They'd park their vehicles out there at night. And his shift was the midnight shift. And he'd be there till like 3-4 in the morning. And same thing, he had seen the same type of lights in the sky. And they would like come closer and move farther away. They shot out towards the ocean, which, you know, Ventura County, they have, we have the Channel Islands and supposedly there's, besides the military bases, there's, you know, there's supposed to be like an underground UFO base there. And they see a lot of, there's a lot of sightings out in that area of lights, but is it the military installations? I don't know. And so like, I don't think it's anything related to the stuff that has been going on recently. I think they're just doing that as a false flag type of thing because I was in the military. Anyways, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but yeah, what we've seen lately isn't like they're televised. That's not, to me, is not UFO. That's all military type stuff.
Yes.
And, but anyways, like when I was in the military, I was stationed at, one of my places I was stationed at was Fort Stewart, Georgia, which is near Savannah. Oh, that place is pretty haunted too. When I was out there, we were doing a field exercise. Part of the thing you do is the field exercise is you do everything like you were doing, you know, you do war games. We were always doing war games. We'd be out like a month at a time. And sometimes we'd go out to the desert here in California. Sometimes we'd go other places. We did all kinds of different training. And the unit I was in is at the time, because I was a mechanic, I was attached to like three different units. And so, well, two main units. And so my unit would go out to the field for 30 days and then we'd come back for 60 days. But because I was attached to another unit, I would go out for 30 days, come back for about a half a day and then go back out for another 30 days. So I'd be like 60 days out all the time. I spent a lot of time out in the desert, out in the woods. And during that time, you pull guard duty. And you do like a 2-hour shift. And one of my 2-hour, and it sucked because when you're playing the war games, you've got nothing to protect yourself because you have your guns, but they don't let you have them loaded because it's war games. You know, half the time they don't even let you take your bayonet out. And so it's what you have on you or what you can sneak out there. We're like in the woods pulling guard duty. And my friend is like, who's with me? You know, there's nothing to do for 2 hours. You have to keep each other awake. And we were looking up at the sky, and we'd see the helicopters go by every once in a while. We had seen these lights really far out. And he's like, oh, look at that shooting star. You know, you do anything to stay awake because you get really bored and go through like a lot of cigarettes and everything, whatever you can do to stay awake. We were just checking out the sky because there's no light pollution, no anything. And we saw a bunch of lights that didn't look right. And they kept getting closer and closer, and they kept like shooting around in all across the sky and then kind of coming back. But when you're in Georgia in the middle of the woods, you're in the middle of pine and swamp, Georgia pine, and that's what they make telephone poles out of. So there's these long straight pines. So all you can really see is up. You can't see anything else. So we could only see it go from like our opening and cross our opening several times. And it got really super close. I would say within 3 or 4 tree levels away from us. And then it just like shot off, and we had both seen it. And we're like, what do we do? And I'm like, we can't call it in because they're going to think we're crazy. And he's like, well, we'll tell Sergeant, you know, in the morning or whatever. It got to the point where it's like, okay, you're there for 2 hours and then you got to go wake somebody else up, but somebody's got to stay in the foxhole. So we stayed, like I'd stay and he'd go wake somebody up, and they're like, okay, you know, what's the report? And we're like, nothing. And you know, we're talking to our sergeant about it the next day. And he's like, do you really want to put that in a report? And I'm like, I don't know. Are we supposed to? And he's like, yeah, we're not putting that in a report.
He was like, that's the hint that you don't want to put it in a report.
Yeah. And he's like, there's a lot of things that people see out here, and they're not going in a report. There's puma tracks out there, even though there's supposed to be no Florida panthers out there, but there are. Like, we had seen that, you know, and going out to the desert, even in California, it was like, you'd see people walking out in the desert, and you'd be on, you know, in the middle of the night, you'd see something walking out in Fort Irwin. Okay, somebody's coming. And so you'd see if you could target them in, because you're playing laser tag, essentially. You see them in the night vision goggles, but then you pull the night vision goggles off, and even with the moonlight, you don't see them. But it's like you see it in the night vision. And then you take the night vision off, and I'm like looking with regular binoculars just to see if I could see. And there's nothing there. But the guy who's in the foxhole with me is like, dude, I see that thing walking around. There's somebody walking around out there. But it would like come in and out of the night vision goggles. Like it would kind of come and it would kind of go. And it was like, are we really seeing something? We're really seeing someone out there, but there's nobody out there. And, you know, same thing, kind of laugh about it and tell the sergeants, no, we're not. I'm sure there's lots of stuff out here. There's mines. There's everything else. It didn't happen. You know, I saw a lot of weird stuff when I was in the military, you know, mostly in the woods and in the desert.
Yeah. Both are equally as creepy as the other. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's creepy being out in the Georgia swamps, man. It's like, oh, there's a creep factor out there. And, you know, that base was built. They basically took up big swaths of land when they took over the military installation. And it's like, so you'd be going down a tank trail and, oh, look, there's an old abandoned plantation house that's like, all there is a foundation. But hey, guess what? Every one of these houses and shacks out there, they all had family cemeteries. And guess what? The cemetery is still there with a little itty bitty tiny wrought iron fence around it. And you've got these Georgia pine and these weird looking trees, cypress trees and everything. And there's this Spanish moss hanging off of them. And it's the creepiest looking thing. And so when I was in a lot of, you know, I'd have quite a lot of time to myself. When I was in, you know, my wife worked and I worked a different shift. Like I would work day shift and she was working a night shift. And so I had nothing to do. So I'd ride my mountain bike around the tank trails out in the woods. So I was like, I want to go check out this, you know, I remember seeing a cemetery down here. So, you know, either go fishing or whatever, go out into the woods and explore. And I'd go to the cemeteries to check them out. And a lot of the cemeteries were like Civil War era, pre-Civil War, and it's just like family cemeteries. And they're creepy. really creepy because there's nothing out there. You're in a swamp. I used to go, and I got lots of pictures of little tiny gravesite areas and family cemetery plots. And like, there's no house, there's no anything, because they had taken down all the housing or whatever was out there, the shacks and everything, because they were dangerous. But you could see the foundation of some of those places. And a lot of those places did not have basements that were near the swamp, because you dig down a couple feet and you get water. So, but I had even taken some photos, and if I can find them sometime, I'd have to send you some. You know, it was back 20 some years ago, 30 years ago, that I took those photos. But there was a couple that I had taken, and I don't know if it was just pareidolia, but like within the trees and outside of the cemetery, you can see, it looks like soldiers standing out there. I remember showing them to my aunt one time, and she was like, oh my God. I'm like, just tell me what you see. And I'm like, she's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't see a lot. I see a bunch of gravestones. And I'm like, look in this area. What do you see? And she's like, oh my God, that looks like a soldier. But I didn't tell her, look exactly right here. But she saw some of the same stuff I saw. So I don't know if it was just pareidolia or what, but I mean, because there's so many leaves, so many everything, but it's like, that definitely looks like a torso of somebody and a face and a hat. Yeah, I should probably send you those if I could find them.
Yeah, that'd be cool to see those. Well, yeah, let's switch gears a little bit. What about this vibration at the petroglyphs?
Okay. So one of the things I like to do is go hiking. I don't hike as much as I used to, but I used to do a lot of hiking. My old scoutmaster used to have tons of old maps, and a lot of the old maps have the old trails that have the sites of petroglyphs, the sites of old village sites. And I like to go check out paintings, cave paintings, or other petroglyphs. And I guess that's what you'd call them. So I know a lot of spots that people don't know about, and I don't tell people about, because I like to have them preserved. And there's a reason they're not on maps a lot of times, because people destroy things like idiots. So I would hike out to a lot of these places and just hang out. And you can feel, to me, I feel vibration when I get into some of these areas. Like, I know I'm getting close to a family site, or I'm getting close to a painting site. And I've gone with people, like taking people out to some of these places. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't remember where it is. And I know where it is. But to me, I kind of feel like if you're supposed to find it, you're going to find it. And some of my friends have gone with me, and they can't see it. And it's only like a foot away from them. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure where it is. Because I just have this feeling like if you're supposed to see certain sites, you'll see it, or you'll find it. I just get this vibrational feeling off of some of these areas. And it's weird, because like when you're looking for sites like that, besides the feeling, it's like there's the indigenous people never did. I mean, all the trails, all the roads, all the everything we have nowadays, those are all trails that the indigenous peoples had. The Spaniards didn't come up here and go, oh, you know, this is the so-and-so trail or whatever. They followed the trails that were already made by peoples before them. They didn't discover some road. They just expanded on it. Same thing with like a lot of camping areas out in the woods and trails. Those trails were there already. And each one of these sites, if you know what you're looking for, you're going to find. Like that, the indigenous people, they did control burns. They did everything. When they lived in a family site, like there's this area by one of the scout camps. There is only one type of tree out there, and it's just a certain kind of pine. But you go into this one valley, and near the petroglyphs and the cave paintings, there's two oak trees within 100 yards from there. But there's no oak trees anywhere else in that valley. It's too high for natural oak trees to be. There's a water source. There's a food source. You see poison oak in one area, but there's also a certain type of sage and a certain type of, I'm trying to think of the name of the plant, like a mugwort or artemisia, or they make absinthe out of it. You go to different areas And you can tell it's a family site because the medicines are there, the foods are there, the everything's there that you need, the water source, the way the shelter is. I like to go hang out in those areas and just kind of take my feet off or my shoes off, put my feet on the stone and relax and meditate. And you can feel, I can feel like the vibration, I guess. And I don't know if that's because I'm in some way connected through in my indigenous blood or whatever, or it's just that I pick up on things, I'm sensitive or what, but I just feel kind of at home a little bit. And then other times I've gone out there to do that kind of thing and I feel like I need to get the hell out of here. There's something out there. And I feel like it's more like predator type animal, not ghostly or scary.
You know, Leo, is there any pattern to that when it feels good and when it feels bad?
No, I just think it has to do with when you're there. And I think I just sense that there's like a predator in the area because in that same area, you know, you walk around the corner and on this side of the mountain, there's tons of different deer bones.
Oh, so you like, mean okay, you mean a physical, literal predator?
Yes. Not,
okay.
Yes.
I thought you meant a bad entity feeling. Okay.
No, but there is an area in one of the scout camps that has like a negative entity, but that's not the area that I'm referring to. It's not too far from there, but a physical, like I sense that something like it's hard for me now to go hiking by myself or camping overnight by myself, which I used to do a lot in the woods. And I don't know why, like I have trouble sleeping now. And it's like, I always hear stuff outside moving around and I can't sleep. Like I'm like, always on edge when I go do that. And it's sort of like, I can't go surfing now. I can't go bodyboarding now because I don't know if it's that I'm getting older. And before I didn't have any sense of mortality. Like you're young and you're going to live forever. And now it's like, I'm out there. I can't go surfing anymore. I'm out there for like 15, 20 minutes. And I'm out way beyond anything waiting for the big wave. And it's like, I start wigging out, like what's underneath me. When I was younger, like I had been brushed up on by, I'm pretty sure it was a shark because it felt like sandpaper when it hit my leg and we saw a fin. And at first we were like, okay, is that a dolphin? Cause we would see dolphins sometimes and not be scared. But like we used to surf a lot in the middle of the night. I had no fear. And now it's like, even after getting brushed up on when I was in all the kelp by, I'm pretty sure it was a shark because I thought I saw the tail when and the shadow underneath me and it bumped my friend's surfboard and we paddled in. We just drove 4 or 5 miles down the coast and got back in the water. That was what we did. Now I'm out there by myself and I start wigging out. I can't do it. And I don't know why that is. The same thing with like, if I go camping by myself, I can't camp by myself because I'm always constantly hearing things and picking up on things and okay, what's out there. What's this? It's like, I feel like I'm getting surrounded by stuff. So I can't do it anymore. I can go in a group, but I can't. And I don't know if I'm just picking up on nothing or I'm getting old and paranoid or what, but yeah, that's, but I do enjoy hiking out in the daytime and I do enjoy older sites. I don't know why. I mean, I'm drawn to history, but I also like, I feel like a connection. And when I get to these painting sites, I feel a connection. I don't know why, but I do. And I mean, I haven't felt that kind of connection. I've only ever felt that kind of a connection intensified times 100 one time. It was like, well, a couple times. You know, I went away to the service, I came back, and I felt like, hey, I'm home. When I go to these painting sites, I kind of feel like I'm home a little bit. And then one time, like my wife and I, we went to Kauai with the kids and I got off the plane and I'm like, I'm home. This is cool. And I wanted to go to every, we didn't do all the touristy things. We just kind of did our own enjoyable things. And there's not a lot to do in Kauai. I mean, there's 100,000 things to do. If you like to hike, you like to swim, you like to snorkel, you like to, but no nightlife chunk like everybody likes to go do. It's just so beautiful. I felt like I was home. I was connected. We left and I cried. We went back and the second I stepped off the plane, it was the only time in my life where I was like, I am home. This is my home. Like, and I don't know what my connection is to it. And it's not like, I mean, I'd traveled all over the place and I've never walked off with, gotten out of the car or whatever and gone, my God, I'm gotten out of the car after I've gotten home from a trip and go, oh, glad to be home. And this feels good to be home. But like that was like a connection beyond anything. And I could care less about going to any other island, but Kauai felt like home. And I went to a lot of sites there. I don't know, like I had a pretty profound thing happen while I was there too. Like I had seen my wife and I were walking around. I had gone to, we were staying in Kapaa. We were walking to this one little area. We had to go through like a coconut grove. I had seen some, like they were doing some construction. I kind of looked through I had looked through the fence and I had seen somebody standing there. I was like, well, that's weird. Like I shouldn't see anybody there. This is like the middle of the coconut grove and there's nothing there. And I kept seeing somebody out there and I thought, oh, this person must be doing a reenactment, or they must be like, I guess, how do I explain it? Like working there, but they're like, there's nothing out there. It was just coconut groves. So that night I had actually had a dream about this old man that I had seen. So coconut grove area, that's like where the kings lived. It's a pretty powerful place and it's very sacred, but yet there's hotels all over it and everything else. And it's been desecrated. But to me, I felt like that part, like I had some kind of connection there. I don't have that ancestry. It's weird that the dialect of the Chumash, a lot of the same words and a lot of the same things, dress-wise and everything else, are very much Polynesian. A lot of their words cross, but you go like to the plains and all their stuff is different, but they all connect in a different way. Like, and you go to like areas of Florida and they have the same dialect of that's crosses with like Aztec or Mayan. It's kind of weird. But anyways, like I'd seen this old man in my dream. This old man was just, he was gathered around with a bunch of kids and he was talking to them and telling them stories, but he was dressed like way different than anybody else. I could only describe him as like an elder. And he was just telling stories to these kids. And when I saw him, like I could see all these different details of him. He was just taking a bunch of kids into a clearing. He was, you know, he had a really beautiful wide smile, but most of his teeth were gone and they were broken and missing, but not like in a scary way or anything. He was just kind and gentle. Then he knew I was there because he allowed me to kind of like come on into the area and watch and talk. And he was telling the kids these stories about things. His dress doesn't really, like, I guess, match up with anybody else that was there. It was like he was wearing like kind of like a loin kind of cloth, but it was made of palm fronds type of thing from the coconut groves. It was just weird. Like he on his knees he had anklets, and on his ankles and on his arms he had the same things, like these things made out of palm fronds and stuff, and even a few feathers, like a little headdress, but that doesn't really kind of correlate with anything that was in that area. But he was so vivid and he was so real. And he had like spoken a few words that kept like echoing in my head. And when I woke up, I tried to remember like all the pronunciation of everything that he had said. I kind of got the courage to ask one of the people at the hotel, what does this word mean? And they just kind of looked at me like I was crazy. And I kept saying like the same phrase. And I don't even know what the hell it was. And this one guy was like, you know, you should go talk to, we have some dancers that come later. You know, you should talk to this lady. But we were leaving that day. I never got to find out what that was. Like I did tell one lady and she was like, hey, where did you hear that word? And I'm like, last night somebody told me about it. They were speaking this to me. And she's like, no, where did you hear that phrase? Like, how do you know that phrase? And I was like, the person, they told me about it. And it was an old man. It was this and that. And, you know, I looked up later that people have, that if somebody in your family died, you'd bust out your teeth and everything else. Like, I don't know. To me, that was, it was a vivid and it was a reality, what I had seen. But I don't know what any of the stuff was and how that was connected or anything. But I had seen this guy in the daytime several times as we were walking through that coconut grove area. That person came to me at night, or not really came to me, but I kind of came across them.
Well, it's interesting about the phrase that kind of seemed to startle the woman.
Yeah. But that was like, I don't know how many years ago. I need to go back because again, I feel like it's my home, but there's a whole dichotomy of moving somewhere like that. Like I totally get it. People don't want other people moving to their area, which is understandable because I totally understand that. I just feel a connection. Like lately I've been having some really weird dreams that were so real, and they had to do with my parents after they passed and everything else. And I do know that that was actually them, but like, oh, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was having some crazy dreams, just weird. They were so vivid and real. One of them was good. You know, I like it. Well, I mean, not good because I ended up passing in this dream, but like my wife and I were taking a trip and we got on a plane, and the plane, there was this big, bright white flash. It was really weird because I know we had wrecked and I know the plane went down, but it was different. I wasn't scared I had always been scared of dying, but after that I wasn't. But I don't understand a lot of the stuff that happened. Like, we had landed and it was dark when we landed. We got off the plane and there were all these different hangars and they were separating everybody out. It was weird because there was like no time there. It was like everything was one solid timeline, if I could describe it that way. Like, there were people there that had just passed away. Everybody there just passed away. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people were there, but they were all from different times. They told me, you have to go to this line. And I'm like, why? Like, I'm trying to get a hold of my wife and she's walking off there. No, she has to go over here and she has to learn about her next life. And I'm like, what? I heard my grandpa's voice. And so I went over to the line they were making me go to. And it was like everybody in this line was like military or police or whatever. And they're like, this is your line. You have to be in this line. And there were people in there in like Civil War uniforms. There were people there in like Roman uniforms. There were people there in today's military uniforms, spanning all the time, World War I uniforms. And they're like, this is the line you need to be in. Some guy in like a general outfit came over and was like, son, this is where you have to be. And I'm like, but I got to talk to my wife. And he's like, don't worry about that. You'll see her again another time. And I'm like, yeah, but I need to tell her goodbye. And he's like, you don't got to worry about that. You'll see her again. We're all going to see everybody again. And I'm like, well, I don't want her to forget me. And he's like, well, she may or may not remember you. But, you know, you've got to learn some things and go back. And I was losing it because I didn't want my wife to forget who I was. That was the only thing that I didn't like about that death, was I was scared that my wife was going to forget who I was. My kids were still home. And I remember I was trying to communicate to them later, like for some reason, oh, I left my car here. Make sure you get the car. That was the most real and vivid dream I had ever had. Like, it was so real, so real. I woke up and I just told my wife, I just don't want you to forget me. And after I've had that dream, I haven't been scared to die. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but was like a real dream to me. And
whatever helps us along, right? I mean, whatever helps us along, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah. But I mean, everywhere I go, I hear and see things. Like, I go to the mission, I hear singing at the mission with people that aren't there. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff. places I've worked where I've seen ghosts and things, and a lot's gone on in my life.
Well, yeah, share one or two more that you feel, you know, out of the list that we haven't covered yet that you wanted to make sure you got out there, if there are any.
Okay, yeah, well, so I worked at a prosthetic shop for a while. After my surgeries, I couldn't work as a heavy equipment mechanic anymore, and I had gone to work in a prosthetic shop locally. I kind of fell into it, but anyways, it was good. I was making prosthetics and orthotics for people who, you know, lost limbs and things. And this building's probably from the early 60s, late 50s. And I always used to see this little girl running around in there. I would see patients in there too sometimes. And I was like, there's a patient in the casting room, you know? They'd go look and they're like, no, it's lunchtime. There's no patient in the casting room. I just saw her. She was in a wheelchair and she's waiting to get casted and she's not on my list. I used to see this old man all the time that was by the oven where we used to bake all the plastics to mold them into things. And I also, besides seeing this little girl, I would see this little girl and she was always playing with toys. And I saw that older lady a few times and she had the same toy in her hand. So one of the days, one of the girls working in the front office was like, hey, you have a patient in the casting room. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, she's in a wheelchair. I didn't know she's not on the list. And so I'm like, describe her to me. And she described her to me. And it's the lady that I always saw in the wheelchair. I'm like, well, let's go back there. And the lady wasn't there. And she's like, no, how the hell did she get out of here? Because she was just, there's no way out of here. But here, she couldn't go up the ramp. And I'm like, yeah, that's the lady I always see.
Finally, some corroboration then from somebody right. else.
But the little girl that I kept seeing, and I, you know, I'd found out from the owner's wife that the building that we were in were two buildings. And they cut the wall out and made that part into the offices and a couple of the clinic rooms. And they made the other into the workshop and the patient clinic rooms. And the one side where I always saw the little girl with the toy and the older lady with the toy was a toy store in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, wow.
And that's the only thing I can think of why that girl was always playing with different toys every right. time I saw her. And the lady, I'm only assuming, is the lady as she was older because she had the same toys that the little girl would always have. And then the old man, I have no idea, but I don't know. The same thing, like where I work now, I see some guy walking around every once in a while. Whenever we're at work, people hear him, and I'm in a different place now doing different stuff. But
and you're the only one that sees him?
I'm the only one who's seen him, but several people have heard him or get there early or stay there late working. The time, another thing, like I had gone out to, my wife and I were hiking near Simi Valley. There's the old Santa Susana stage road. And it was a stagecoach route. And in order to get over the hill, they would take this route up a stone part of the mountain. And if you follow this trail, it's a little wider than a car. But there's ruts all the way up the mountain from where the stagecoaches would follow this trail. The ruts were so deep that they actually had to move the trail over a little bit to create new ruts because it was ground into the stone. And they have all these little tiny holes all the way up the mountain to where they would stick steel poles into the holes that were drilled into the mountain. And they would hook up like chains and pulleys. And then they would, along with the horses and the mules pulling, they would hook up to these so that if they slipped, they wouldn't fall down the mountain or go all the way down the mountain. And same thing going down was a different process too, that they had with winches and pulleys. And it's crazy because there's these deep ruts from the stagecoach, but then there's all these holes on the side of the mountain and on the side of the trail going up so that they could fasten so that the stage wouldn't fall off the hill. Anyways, we were hiking on this thing and I kept smelling pipe tobacco and I would hear people talking, but there was nobody else on that trail but my wife and I. I mean, you could see all the way around when you're on that trail. And a couple times I heard like a stagecoach, and not like so much, but the noise of the horses and the noise of the, but there was nothing there. And this is like the middle of the day. And I was like, part of me is like, I'd love to go crash out there one night just to see what I could hear or see. And then the other part of me is like, I want nothing to do with that. Unless I was with a group of people or something.
Right. But, well, especially after, I mean, look at the history in California that you've covered on this round, right? Like, even besides all that, you've got the creature at Camp Ouellette. So, yeah, a lot going down.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming back on to share all of this, Leo.
All right. Well, I appreciate you letting me come back on again.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are.
Thank you. poem before Cortez, where he says, when you settle down in the train to read your newspaper and so on, you are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, now get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.